Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and stories from around the world is designed for people learning English. So, we speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. On the show today, Brian Lynn has a story about Facebook. Susan Shand tells about how Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh celebrated the Muslim holiday Eid al-Adha. And we close the show with our American history program, The Making of a Nation. Today, Steve Ember tells about the administration of the 39th President, Jimmy Carter. But first, here is Ashley Thompson.
A new study published Tuesday has found increased support for charter schools and private school voucher programs. The study suggests that Republican Party support for these programs had a strong influence on the increase. A charter school is a school that receives a special charter or written rules from a state government. These schools, a type of school choice, are publicly funded but operate independently from school districts. School voucher programs permit public funds to pay for students to attend a private or religious school. The findings by Education Next were published by Harvard University's Kennedy School and Stanford University. They come as Education Secretary Betsy DeVos promotes alternatives to traditional public schools. The study found that 44% of respondents said they support the expansion of charter schools, compared to 39% in 2017. However, that number was at 51% in 2016. The study found that 57% of Republicans included in the study support charter schools. 36% of Democrats said the same. The number of Republicans who answered favorably in last year's study was 47%. The number among Democrats in 2017 was 34%. Martin West of Harvard University is one of the report's writers. He said, "Support is up among Republicans for various strategies to expand school choice, and the Trump administration's embrace of those policies is a likely explanation." Nina Rees is president of the organization National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. She said the findings demonstrate through the educational choices they make for children, families want higher quality charter school options for their kids. Rees added, "Above all else, parents care that their child has access to an excellent school, and as education advocates, it is our job to ensure that wish becomes a reality." Robin Lake is with the Center on Reinventing Public Education. Lake noted that the issue of charter schools has become extremely political. Lake said, "I don't think that an education policy that's designed to get better outcomes for kids should ever be a partisan issue." Support also grew for publicly funded vouchers given to low-income families to help them pay for private schools. The study found that those in favor of such efforts rose from 37% in 2017 to 42% this year. A low-income family is one that earns less than twice the federal poverty line. The report also found that Americans seem to be more satisfied with their local police and the post office than with their neighborhood school. 51% of respondents said they would give their local schools a grade of A or B. A grade of A or B means above average. But 68% gave the local post office a similar grade. 69% gave a similar grade to the local police. Patrick McEwen, an education and political science professor at Drew University, said it makes sense that if only 51% of Americans are giving public schools a high grade, then support for other school choices would grow. The Education Next report was based on interviews with 4,601 adults across the United States.
Facebook is now rating users on how trustworthy they are in identifying and reporting real and false news. The ratings system was first reported by the Washington Post. A Post reporter interviewed Facebook product manager Tessa Lyons, who leads the company's efforts to fight misinformation. Lyons told the newspaper the system was developed and put into place over the past year. In January, Facebook announced a similar system to produce ratings for the trustworthiness of news sources. At that time, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg said those ratings would be based on information provided by Facebook users. Zuckerberg said news sources receiving higher trustworthy ratings from the community would be prioritized in the social media service's news feed. The new ratings system is designed to predict how effective a user is at identifying and reporting false news stories. Every user is given a rating between 0 and 1, the Post reports. Lyons told the newspaper such a system is necessary because some users are incorrectly reporting whether a story is true or false. It's not uncommon for people to tell us something is false simply because they disagree with the premise of a story or they're intentionally trying to target a particular publisher, Lyons said. As an example, she said a user's trustworthiness rating would go up if they previously reported a news story as false and the story was later confirmed as false by an independent fact-checker. In addition to information from users, Facebook uses machine learning systems to choose stories to be checked for truthfulness. The company has a partnership with several major news and fact-checking organizations that examine news stories reported as possibly being false. Lyons noted that the numbered rating is not the single measure Facebook uses to judge a user's overall trustworthiness. She said the company also uses other signals to rate users, but did not provide further details. In addition to taking steps to fight misinformation, Facebook has also sought to limit efforts by foreign organizations to influence the U.S. political process. Facebook previously found evidence that false accounts created in Russia and other nations were used to try to influence American voters in the 2016 election. On Tuesday, Facebook said it had identified and removed hundreds of accounts linked to Russia and Iran. It said the accounts were part of separate disinformation campaigns on Facebook. In announcing the findings, Facebook chief Zuckerberg said there was still a lot the company does not know about the operations. However, he described the campaigns as sophisticated and well-financed efforts that are likely to continue. You're going to see people try to abuse the services in every way possible, including now nation states, Zuckerberg said. Spokesmen for both Iran and Russia denied any state involvement in the activities described by Facebook. This week, American software maker Microsoft reported it had taken control of several websites created by hackers linked to Russia's government. The company said the websites were made to look like they belonged to the U.S. Senate and conservative research groups. But they were actually false websites created in an effort to gather personal details of users. Microsoft warned the hacking incidents were further evidence that Russia is expanding its attacks before U.S. congressional elections in November. I'm Brian Lynn.
Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh celebrated the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha on Wednesday. The refugees prayed for better lives and wondered if they will ever go back to their homes in Myanmar. The calls to prayer came early in the large refugee camps. People lined up in temporary structures used as mosques. Children with newly washed clothes watched from a window. The four-day holiday of Eid al-Adha celebrates the Prophet Ibrahim and his willingness to sacrifice his son. Muslims often kill sheep, cattle, or goats on the holiday. Some of the meat is distributed to the poor. But the refugees in this camp are the poor, and few gave such gifts. The Muslim Rohingyas have faced generations of discrimination in largely Buddhist Myanmar. They are denied citizenship rights, attacked, and sometimes not able to practice their religion. "We could not pray during Eid in my village for years. We had to pray secretly," said refugee Nurul Alam. "I have freedom here, but I don't want it here." "We don't belong here," he continued. "It's good that nobody is coming to kill us, but I want to go back where my parents' graves are located." More than 700,000 Rohingyas entered Bangladesh last year. They are fleeing a campaign of destruction by the Myanmar military and Buddhist mobs. The campaign followed attacks by a Rohingya rebel group. Thousands of people are believed to have been killed in the attacks by the Myanmar military. Rights activists believe it was the government's attempt to drive the Rohingya from the country. Many in Buddhist-majority Myanmar see the Muslim Rohingyas as illegal migrants from Bangladesh. They call them Bengalis. Most have long lived in poverty in Myanmar's Rakhine state, next to Bangladesh. The events of the past year have made for a sad Eid al-Adha. "We are happy, But again, we are not happy, said 60-year-old Shamsul Alam as he walked to a mosque for prayers. I had my land. Here I don't have any problem for food, but I don't have what I need. I am nobody here, he said. I'm Susan Shand.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the administration of the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter. It is January 20th, 1977, Inauguration Day. America's newly elected president, Jimmy Carter, is on his way to the White House after his swearing-in ceremony at the Capitol building. But the new president is not riding in a car, he is walking. His wife, Rosalind, and his daughter, Amy, walk with him. Crowds along Pennsylvania Avenue cheer. Bands play. On this cold day in Washington, Americans look to the future. Watergate, the crisis that led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, is several years in the past. The Vietnam War is history, too. Republican Gerald Ford served the remaining years of Nixon's term. Many people believe he brought respect and order back to the government. Yet he lost the office to Democrat Jimmy Carter in the election of 1976. The nation still has problems. Unemployment is high. So is inflation. But the future of the nation looks bright. Jimmy Carter feels sure about his future, too. On the day before his inauguration, he said,
I do feel that the people of this nation, and I think the entire world, wish me well and want to see me succeed as president. And that gives me a sense of reassurance and confidence. I think I'm ready now to be president.
During the election campaign, Carter often said he would be different from other presidents. He told voters he was not a member of the Washington political establishment, so he would do things in his own independent way. Carter was from Georgia, in the deep south of the United States. There had not been a president born in the South in more than 100 years. Carter studied nuclear engineering and attended the United States Naval Academy. He planned to stay in the Navy. Then his father died, and he decided to return to Georgia to operate the family peanut farm. Carter began his political life on the committee that supervised schools in his hometown of Plains, Georgia. He also served in other local offices. In 1966, he failed to win the Democratic nomination for governor of Georgia. For the next 4 years, he traveled around the state gathering support. He won the next election. As governor, Carter earned praise for reorganizing the state government. He also reformed state programs dealing with prisons and mental health care. In 1972, he offered himself as a candidate for vice president with presidential candidate George McGovern. But the Democratic Party chose someone else. Carter did not wait long to begin his next political move. He would try to win the Democratic presidential nomination in 1976. Jimmy Carter was hardly known outside the state of Georgia. Political experts gave him little chance. Even his mother was surprised to learn that he wanted to be president. President of what, she asked. But the farmer and former governor had a plan. He would try to win his party's primary elections in the South. He believed this would give him enough support at the party convention to win the nomination. Other Democratic candidates tried to stop him, but his plan worked. By the time of the convention, he had enough support to win the nomination on the first ballot. In the general election, Carter defeated President Ford by almost 2% of the popular vote. He lost in the West and Middle West, but won the South and Northeast. President Carter believed strongly in human rights. He hoped he could use his new position to support human rights throughout the world. On this and other issues, he was not afraid of being criticized when he believed he was right. For example, he believed it was right for the United States to end its control of the Panama Canal. He won congressional support for treaties to give control to Panama by the year 2000. He believed it was right to give diplomatic recognition to Communist China. And he believed it was right to continue negotiations with the Soviet Union about limiting nuclear weapons, even though he denounced human rights violations there. In 1979, Carter and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev signed the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, known as SALT II. However, Carter decided not to send the treaty to the Senate for approval after the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan later that year. One of the finest moments of Carter's presidency took place at Camp David. That is the holiday home of American presidents. There, in March 1979, President Anwar Sadat of Egypt met with Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel. They signed a peace treaty ending 30 years of war between their countries.
We are privileged to witness tonight a significant achievement in the cause of peace, an achievement none thought possible a year ago or even a month ago, an achievement that reflects the courage and wisdom of these two leaders.
Both men said the treaty would not have been possible without President Carter's help. President Carter was not as successful in dealing with the economy. High unemployment and inflation continued. The federal deficit increased, although he had promised to end it. And there was a shortage of gasoline. The shortage resulted when oil-producing countries limited production and exports. Carter urged American companies to develop new sources of energy in addition to oil. He said the United States needed to do this because it could not always depend on getting enough oil from other countries.
This intolerable dependence on foreign oil threatens our economic independence and the very security of our nation. The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now.
During the gasoline shortage, Americans had to wait in long lines to buy fuel. They did not like it and were angry. Many were even more angry about a different situation. Like the gasoline shortage, it was a result of actions in another distant place.
Good evening. The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students. The Americans inside have been taken prisoner.
On November 4th, 1979, Muslim extremists in Iran seized the American Embassy in Tehran. They took many hostages, including more than 60 Americans. The extremists said they were punishing the United States for being friendly with ousted Iranian leader Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The extremists refused to negotiate. They refused to release the hostages. In early April 1980, President Carter broke off diplomatic relations with Iran. He then ordered American military forces to try to rescue the hostages in Tehran. The operation failed. A sandstorm caused two of the aircraft to crash into each other. They went down in the desert hundreds of kilometers away. The failed rescue attempt had a major effect on the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Many Americans felt it showed that he could not do the job. Their respect for him continued to decrease as the hostages continued to be held. Other things were beginning to go wrong, too. The president's younger brother, Billy, admitted receiving a large amount of money from Libya. He took the money in exchange for supporting Libyan interests with American lawmakers. His mistake was that he did not list his name as a representative of a foreign government. '80 was a presidential election year in the United States. President Carter was expected to be the candidate of the Democratic Party, but his chances were almost ruined because of the situation in Iran. Carter hoped that concern for the hostages would unite the country behind him. Instead, support turned to blame. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts believed he could defeat Carter for the nomination. Kennedy won several important Democratic primary elections. But that was not enough. The party renominated Carter. Kennedy offered Carter his support, but not very strongly. This left the party divided. The Republicans got ready to win back the White House. They hoped to do it with a strong appeal to American voters. The appeal came from a man who would become one of America's most popular presidents, Ronald Reagan.
That was Steve Ember with our American history program, The Making of a Nation. That is all the time we have for today, but we'll be back tomorrow with more stories from around the world. Hope you will join us too. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.